Well, yesterday was a big day for digital media. Gawker.com shut down. Its final post was yesterday at 5:33 p.m. by longtime owner Nick Denton. It was essentially an essay about what happened with the lawsuit that Hulk Hogan brought and also Peter Thiel. In studio, or joining me on the line now, Scott Smith. He's our media contributor. This is a big day, Scott. This is something that I was thinking more and more about how much Gawker.com has been a part of my media life. 13 years, that's a pretty long time to be a digital news company.
I think for most people, particularly people outside New York, it's easy to forget that Gawker's been around since 2002, right? And they were sort of, you know, part of the building blocks of the way people talk about things online and the way that, you know, different viewpoints and different voices got heard and things got debated, that, you know, you weren't just depending on a primary, what a lot of people call mainstream media news source for information. Things, you know, had commentary wrapped around them. And Gawker mm-hmm. was one of the first biggest, not necessarily the first, but one of the first biggest places to do that.
It's so interesting, too, because it was a site that really, at the end of the day, was a media site. It kind of looked at, you know, kind of peel back the old curtain on the media companies in New York City. That's sort of how it started. But then it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it took on a lot of media stories and the culture of celebrity that surrounds the media.
Right. And, you know, in Nick Denton's goodbye note, he mentions that, you know, they were, you know, specifically built to mock the powerful. And I think, you know, that is an important impulse and one that should remain, you know, going, you know, there are tons of ways in which, you know, the powerful have been mocked. And that should be it's a huge part of the internet now. And sometimes that's for good and sometimes that's for ill. But I think, you know, Gawker became so consumed by the mission to mock the powerful that it often saw power where there was none, you know, going after the kids of celebrities or kids of sort of powerful media figures, for example. You know, they showed us there was a different way to write online, but, you know, it's that particular Pandora's box is kind of opened in all kinds of ways.
You know, it reminds me, I mean, they're not going to find a lot of empathy from or sympathy from any of America when it comes to media companies, because the issues that ultimately torpedoed Gawker were ones that I think the American public were kind of scoffing against or going against, saying enough of this stuff about outing people, sex lives, personal, doing things that essentially was muckraking at its lowest level. Gawker seemed to really identify with that, and that's where they got a lot of their traffic and sort of the salacious stuff. So, you know, and that's kind of interesting that's what the company did, and ultimately that's what brought the company down.
Right. I mean, there's some, we want, you know, people who think too highly of themselves to kind of have a, you know, a pin poked in their particular balloon. But, you know, it got to a point, you know, almost a year ago in July of 2015, you know, where Gawker was in the position of having to remove a post about a Condé Nast CFO who was allegedly, you know, hiring an escort. And it was based on really flimsy evidence. It seemed very clear that what evidence they were printing was in, you know, in the service of trying to blackmail this person. So they were complicit in that. And so, you know, when that post was removed, the editorial staff sort of, you know, largely en masse had objected to it. And I think a lot of people kind of looked around and said, what exactly is being defended here? And it had sort of become, you know, it come full circle in that, you know, a site that was designed to mock the powerful, you know, was now, you know, kind of their own, you know, hypocrisy was being exposed, and they were now seeing themselves as above reproach. It was the very kind of, you know, cockiness that they, you know, existed to demean.
It's, I mean, and obviously the story gets really, really complicated when you bring Peter Thiel in. Peter was an executive in 2007 that was outed in a Gawker piece for being gay. He has, you know, since then put billions of his own money up to try and destroy Gawker through lawsuits. And he was the one who actually put the money up for the lawsuit that Hulk Hogan brought against Gawker that ultimately took them down. There's something there. There's something interesting which makes this more of a – we're not just doing an obituary piece about Gawker.com. We're talking about what it means to be the company that mocks and what it means to be someone who's in that position who has power, money, and authority and can use that to try and take that company down.
Yeah, you can not necessarily mourn the loss of Gawker, but still be very concerned about its demise and the situation that's occurred that has, you know, resulted in its closing shop. And it's important to note sort of there's Gawker, the website, and then sort of Gawker, the media network, which has been purchased by Univision, and all the editorial staff from Gawker will now have kind of other jobs. So there is that. But, you know, your point is that, you know, here is a person who, for, you know, up until very recently secretly funded a years-long campaign to bring down the site and suing Gawker in a number of different ways. And in this particular way, you know, funding Hulk Hogan's, you know, lawsuit against them. Again, defending something that a lot of people find particularly indefensible. Mm-hmm. But the question is, you know, let's take it outside of this context, for example. There are plenty of sites like The Information or Pando Daily, for example, that pride themselves on covering the tech industry in a very pointed manner and in a way that does, in a much more journalistic way, what Gawker has said it's done, which is to, you know, really hold a mirror up to the powerful and decide if they are who they say they are. And those sites are writing about the very people that Peter Thiel kind of represents as an avatar, a tech billionaire with tons of money. And even if he loses a lawsuit, you know, the loss of that kind of money isn't that much for him. So, I mean, you look at sites like that that are writing about the powerful that are now potentially targets for this kind of thing. And it's also important to note, you know, the lawyer that went after Gawker on behalf of Hulk Hogan is now underemployed by Melania Trump, and she's saying she's going to sue various news organizations.
So we're going to see because
of
the success.
About her.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've seen that with tabloids like the Inquirer and some of those where they've been sued and almost in a way been dismantled. I mean, they're still a part of newspapers, you know, ecosystem, but not like they used to be. Are we going to start seeing that from gossip sites and sites online where, you know, the only way to sort of counter for the power to counter these sites is to essentially take them to court?
Yeah, I mean, there's this has been ongoing for a long, long time. But I think the key difference here is that in the past, the people who were suing, you know, famous people who were, let's say, who were suing a newspaper that said something about them, it was very obvious who was being sued and who was doing the suing. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was a person who, under the current law, was able to secretly fund those lawsuits for, you know, I think it was something, if I recall correctly, something like 7 years. So it was quite a long time. And that's, I think, the difference here, and that there are people who are willing to do this and very clearly have not suffered particular consequences. You know, Peter Thiel is obviously on the Facebook board and all that kind of thing. And it's not as if those actions have resulted in any kind of serious consequences for the person doing it. So the question is, like, when does this become less about a sex tape or less about an outing and more about something that's a lot more in the public interest? And what happened then?
Yeah. Freedom of press. I mean, that's at the ultimate, that's where they need to, Gawker and company need to go to, because I think, you know, that's the one thing that I think people understand. I want to read a paragraph from Denton's essay. You know, he talks about the founding of Gawker. And he says, when we founded it, there was a sense that the internet was a free space where anything could be said, an island off the mainland where people could be themselves, where writers could say things that could get you fired in an instant from a print publication, where you could say what you thought without fear of being fired or sued out of existence. But when you try to make a business out of that freedom, the system will fight you. Is that what happened?
No. I mean, like, yes, there was a point at which, I mean, to some extent, he's correct. I mean, there was a point on the internet, and 2002 was a pretty good time period for it. And I would say it's, you know, up until this sort of like content industrial complex took over the internet, where sites like, let's say, BuzzFeed or Vox made a business out of, hey, one person said a thing online and it's blown up completely. You know, we think about like Justine Sacco, who was sort of like her, you know, she gets on a plane, she tweets something awful,
right, and she's
on a plane for 14 hours. Like, one small thing like that can get blown up really quickly. And obviously Gawker, you know, had a big hand in that too. So, you know, to say that, you know, hey, we used to be able to say things without, you know, having to worry about the consequences of it, I don't think that we were ever really truly in a society. We just reached the point where the internet has a far greater reach than before. And quite honestly,
that's a good point.
One of the people to blame for that is Gawker.
Right.
So, you know,
that's true.
They're
no longer the island, right? I mean, they are the mainland. So you're right. All the things he just said there about, you know, where writers could say things that get you fired in an instant from print publication, they are the print publication. They are the big dog. And they're exactly what he talked about is happening to that company, or did happen.
And Gawker prided itself on being the one to point out, like, hey, somebody said a thing. There should be some kind of consequences for that. That was part of what they've done. It was part of what Nick Denton is most proud of. That, like a lot of things on the internet, cuts both ways.
Okay, Scott. So is there going to be, I mean, if we look into the, you know, the media textbooks of the future, will Gawker have a place? Will Gawker be a place that people go, you know, let's talk about the very important time from 2002 to 2016. And let's start with Gawker.com.
I think it absolutely gets referenced. I mean, there are things on the internet that had far less of an influence that have now shuttered that still get kind of mentioned and held in high regard. I think there will be, it'll be interesting to see what version of Gawker survives. If it is the sort of like down in the muck version, or if it is the one that truly, you know, for a time, you know, spoke truth to power when it was important. Or whether it will, in fact, be, you know, it won't just be the thing that a lot of times you end up in history books and it's the winners that get, you know, the write-up. It'll be interesting if sort of both sides of Gawker end up really getting talked about when we talk about Gawker in the future.
Well, Nick Denton's last line, so Gawker's demise turns out to be the ultimate Gawker story. It's true. It's true.
Indeed.
Scott Smith, media contributor here at Download. Thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Always fun.